Was that exciting enough, John?
Terribly exciting for the morning, Paul. I'm always amazed at your energy levels.
Well, you know, I tried to kick it up a notch today. I'm here enjoying the Victoria summer in my flip-flops and socks.
Isn't it a gorgeous summer here on the West Coast?
It always is.
Oh, my.
If you're listening from anywhere in the rest of Canada or the world, too bad for you.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Pretty soon we're going to have some video attached to this, but not too soon.
So we have an interesting show coming up. We've got Dallas Gisselson from the Greater Victoria Development Agency who's coming back. And I understand you are a founding father.
Founding father, yes.
Of the GVDA. So
you're never going to let that go, are you?
Never, ever. Never, ever. And we're going to do a little segment. Instead of This Week in Politics, we're going to do This Week in Business. And Dallas is going to tell us a little bit about some of the cool businesses that he's been working with.
It's so perplexing that media in general will report on only the bad stuff that goes on in business.
Right.
And so we read about these things and they're sensationalist and we go, wow, that's really crummy. Yet so many good things are happening. So I think a This Week in Business allows us to talk about the successful stuff that's going on in the city.
Yeah. And as by way of disclaimer, none of these are formal endorsements of any of these businesses for investment purposes or otherwise, but we wanted to just showcase some of the cool stuff that's going on. We also have another council candidate, for this time for Saanich Council. Tell us about that, John.
Well, inevitably, we're going to get a plethora of folks putting their names forward for November. For our listeners outside of the scope of Vancouver Island, there are municipal elections in November, and in some of these municipalities, upwards of 3,000-4,000 people put their name forward.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know. I ran years ago for Victoria City Council, and I remember some of the people that municipal election brought out, and it was very exciting. We'd go to all candidates' debates, and there'd be drums playing, and it was kind of like a circus act, and... But there was also some serious stuff going on as well.
Well, Colin is a teacher at a local secondary school. He is going to run for council. We have interviewed him, and we're going to listen to what he has to say about the beautiful municipality of Saanich.
Absolutely. And just during the intro here, I wanted to mention again that we have a Patreon page. And for those of you who don't know what it is, go on your web browser and go to Patreon, patreon.com/ John, Paul, and Mike. And what this is, John, is it's actually a really...
Oh, hold on.
Yeah?
What is Patreon?
What is Patreon? You're lying. You know what it is. We're not hoping to make the big bucks off this show, but we were kind of curious just to play with this tool. And so even if you don't think... we're the best podcast that you know. Check it out anyway, because it's such a neat concept. So what it is if there's some content you like on the internet that's being produced for free, Patreon provides some tools that allow you to subscribe to that person or that content creator and basically endorse them with your money, making it worthwhile for them to continue doing whatever it is they're doing. And it started out, you know, obviously it's a play on words of patron. And so, you know, you think of the patron of the arts is somebody who contributes money to the arts. And so it's extended a little beyond that. It started out, I think, with kind of, you know, online comics and, you know, video production, YouTube channels, stuff like that. It's extended now into podcasts. And it's a really neat concept. And anyway, I encourage people to check it out. And the cool thing about it is for like $1 a month, you can show your support for somebody and the content that they're producing.
Well, there are just so many ways in which media, audio, communications is now delivered via the internet. So many ways in which it can be funded and supported.
Yeah.
It's not just us. Could be the arts. Could be a different ways in which a person can support what they believe in. So it's neat that we're exploring that.
Yeah, and just a shout out to my good friend Steve Dotto, whose podcast is Dotto Tech, and it was actually him that discovered it and brought it to my attention, and it's a really neat idea. So if you're into technology, Dottotech's also a really great podcast to tune into.
Okay, well, let's get on with the show.
Right on.
Welcome to the John, Paul, and Mike Show. My name is Paul Holmes, and with me today is...
your forever partner, John Jurisic.
Forever partner?
Is that...
Are we taking this relationship to the next level, John? I really should probably check with my wife first.
Okay.
Yeah. we're very excited today, because we're sitting down with another... council candidate. And, you know, traditional media, always has, what the current council is doing. And, you know, it's easy, I think, for the mayor of Victoria or for, you know, even a councillor from Saanich or whatnot to get a news story out because they're a known entity. And so here on the John, Paul, and Mike Show, we featured now for the second week in a row, we're featuring a council candidate that's brand new entering the race in November. And an opportunity to sort of meet somebody new.
Yeah, and certainly, I don't think traditional media gives candidates a chance to really express what they feel, what their policy positions are, and certainly don't get a chance to view to, or chat with folks who are brand new, who might be considered what we call fringe candidates, as opposed to the incumbents, which I think is totally unfair. So I'm really glad that we're going to be chatting with one of those candidates from Saanich today.
Yeah, and that is Colin Plant. Colin is running for Saanich Council and CRD Director, and his website is colinplant.com, and he's on Twitter as ColinPlant2014. So, Colin, what the heck? Why are you running for Saanich Council?
Well, first off, thanks for having me here. It's nice to meet you both. I'm running for Saanich Council because I want to help make Saanich the greatest place in Canada to live. And at first that may sound a little bit Pollyannish, but many of us will acknowledge the Greater Victoria region is seen as the greatest place in Canada to live. And personally, I think Saanich is the jewel within that greatest part of Canada that we call Victoria. I want to help shape Saanich going forward. I have four children, all boys, bless my wife. And I want to see Saanich become the greenest and most livable place in Canada to work. Economics, very important. Play and to recreate, which I guess is play, but live. And so I want to help be a voice that helps create that future. I come at things very pragmatically. I'm very centrist. I don't come with an agenda that business is bad. Quite the contrary. Development is good. It just needs to be done well. And I also come with a background in agriculture. I grew up on a dairy farm. And so I get the rural Saanich piece. I'm an educator. I teach up at Claremont Secondary. So I get children. I understand what children are thinking about. And I also have a background in the arts. So I come at this with a bit of a different background. And I ran a theater company, so I'm not naive to business. It wasn't the greatest theater company, so perhaps I'm not as good at business as I thought I was. But I want to be a voice at the table to help make Saanich great. I'm not saying I have all the answers. But I really feel that Saanich is positioned to be the greatest place in Canada to live. And I have a lot of ideas on how we can do that. But I also want to talk to other people about how we can do that.
It's funny. I've ran two theater companies myself, and I never actually considered them to be businesses at all. it's real hard to make money in this town. But we'll talk about that one a little later. I know John has a burning question.
Oh, I'm burning over here. Well, before we get into that, I remiss if we didn't identify where we're broadcasting from.
Yeah,
we're broadcasting from the boardroom of the West Shore Chamber of Commerce. Acting Executive Director Lindsay Wilson has been very generous in allowing us time and space. So thank you. Thank you, West Shore Chamber of Commerce. Thank you, Lindsay Wilson, for allowing us to broadcast from there. I think that's unfortunate because sometimes we've lied about where we've broadcast from, you know, like we're in New York or or Seattle or yeah. Edmonton or
yeah, Dubai. Yeah, and of course we're fans of the West Shore Chamber and what they're doing out here. Yeah. And for business owners, you need to check it out.
Yeah,
for sure.
Colin, so I have been involved with chambers of commerce now better part of 20 years. Passionate about economic development. continue to be active with ECDEV, with Peninsula companies actually out here in the West Shore as well. A key component for keeping our youth in the region, keeping skilled trades here in the region, allowing companies to grow and be sustainable, allowing our communities to be sustainable, is this question about affordable workforce housing. And I've done a ton of work in North Saanich and Sydney and Central Saanich around these issues, and it's been perplexing to me how hasn't bubbled up at the Saanich Council table, and it should, because to some degree that might be where all the land is. And so can you give us, where do you stand on this issue, and how might you impact what I think is a huge barrier to sustainable growth in all areas for Victoria, for Saanich, etc.?
Yeah, that's a pretty big topic there. And if I think, to be fair, John and Paul, if there really was an answer out there that was a quick, easy fix, I would like to believe that one of the councillors already in Saanich would have come up with that. So I don't want to be disparaging towards them. I think you're right, though. It is the biggest issue that's facing young people today, more than the sewage issue, which I hope we get into as well. But you're right. Affordable housing is a topic in Saanich that needs to be brought forward. Now, to be fair, Saanich has done a couple things that have been geared towards that, with the legalization of suites south of Mackenzie, and now what looks like is going to be a recommendation to extend that and mirror it north of Mackenzie. Now, there's a duality to that, though, because as much as it's great to have this official status, and then you can begin to get more tax revenue from that and the inventory of housing, most people aren't doing it, because the code that you would have to adhere to have that be a viable legal suite, many suites aren't. I'm sure we all know somebody, or even ourselves, who lived in a suite that wouldn't have met code. There's a stove plugged into an electrical outlet as opposed to a stove outlet, that sort of thing. So one is the fact that you have this inventory. The other piece that I think you have to look at is that they are encouraging developers to have some lower cost housing in developments. I look at the Trevino Place one, on the former Royal Oak School grounds, the middle school grounds. Within that, the developer, Garrick Construction, is putting in some CRD operated low cost housing. And so within this many unit structure, and several structures actually, there will be low cost housing within. So when you're looking at multifamily, I think that's one of the ways you can do that. And how do you get that from the developer? You have to be flexible and perhaps offer some business advantages for them. Maybe they get an extra floor. Maybe there is an allowance to have a certain amount of square footage on the property. Maybe that is the public amenity instead of putting in a sidewalk. Not that sidewalks aren't important, and in Saanich, they're very important. So that, I think the other thing going forward is finding ways to encourage people to build low-cost housing. And maybe that's a taxation, looking at a different way of taxing new construction if it's going to be more affordable. The reality is there isn't a simple answer. There's going to be a glut of housing in Victoria when this generation of older residents start to move on, whether or not it's to residential care or to the afterlife, if you believe in such. And the reality for that is there will be more housing on the market eventually. I really believe that.
I guess the issue with there's an intergenerational issue as well, and we've seen this a fair bit. And I remember one of my favorite books back in the day was Boom, Bust, and Echo by David Foote. And years later, he admitted that the one big mistake he made in that was the assumption that baby boomers would move out of their big houses and into smaller ones, therefore freeing up a lot of bigger houses for families to afford. And so we see a great number of these bigger houses, and I think Saanich is probably the worst in the region for this, where it's mom and dad, kids have long moved out, and they're starting their families in tiny houses or condos because they just can't afford anything else. So I see that as a problem, you know.
Not only might there be a reluctance to move, there's actually an inability to buy, and that's the sustainable part of all of this is there. I know from experience in North Saanich, of which there is an enormity of very expensive houses, as there should be. There are beautiful houses on the water. They can't, there are no buyers. And if there are, they're from elsewhere. They're not within the community. I am and have been a huge Frank Leonard supporter for many years, as with Susan Bryce, Leif Workland, etc. I think that Saanich has done a great job, and I'm glad that you've identified some sort of key pieces that have helped what I call the workforce housing related issue. So I'm glad to hear that you might continue on that, on those ways, and certainly encourage a sustainable youth oriented attitude towards housing. I'm really glad to hear that, Colin. Good for you.
Yeah. And so maybe, I guess first question then is, do you see that that is an issue? And is there anything that can really be done about that? And then the second one is sort of related, although not necessarily. We're in a situation economically in Greater Victoria now where for many people, it actually makes far more sense to rent than to buy. Unfortunately, the rental stock in Victoria is generally pretty lousy. There's some nice houses that get put up for rent, but by and large, especially when you look at the purpose-built rental market, it's been non-existent. Most of the stock is, you know, from the 60s or whatnot, right? Is there an opportunity there? And you talk about CRD housing and, you know, other sort of government programs like that, but is there a market solution for purpose-built housing anywhere on the horizon, given the current economics?
It's a good question. And again, if you believe in the free market system, you'd say that if there was a solution, it would be already there. And to be really blunt, I think the reality of housing in this part of the world is that land is so precious, and that the average socioeconomic status of people who do own houses is higher than those without, that the density is where I think people will have a chance to buy in. The reality of creating smaller units, flexible sizes that will allow people to get a foothold. I mean, we're talking about units that maybe are 600 or 700 square feet, which to a homeowner sounds tiny. But if you're a young family starting out, you can probably get one or two bedrooms into that space and to build some equity up. So if you can offer those densities in exchange for lower costs, then you may have a chance for people to buy in. The reality is, so many families nowadays only can buy a house if their parents help them buy it. Mm-hmm. And so the market answer is it is a challenge for young families to do it. I mean, to be fully disclosure, I lived in CRD housing. I spent 5 or 6 years there with my wife, and it helped us immensely because we could build up some capital. Mm-hmm. But even then, when we bought our first home in Souk, we were able to do that only because both of our parents helped us out. Mm-hmm. And so how do we do that? I think the low interest is a good thing right now, but the government has made moves in policy lately, the federal government, around mortgages, that you can't put zero down. You can't have these 30-year mortgages, which were incentives for young families to buy. So the answer for me has to be affordable sized spaces that give people a step up. Things like Habitat for Humanity are also a great venture, where they buy a property and they will help build it and then identify families who can move into it who are in need. But there will never be enough. Now, going to the apartment thing, I think you're right. An investment in more apartments is something that should be considered. However, developers, why would they do that? Mm-hmm. And so that's where you have to provide an incentive to have apartments as opposed to condos. A condo is sold and the developer's gone. And I don't mean that like they're a bad developer, but they've done their piece of work. Whereas if you have apartments, there's property managers, there's a continuity of having to maintain an upgrade. Whereas if you do condos, it goes to the strata, and again, the developer has done their piece. So how do you do that with apartments? I think you have to look again at the taxation. Maybe that apartments have different taxations than others. Maybe there's an in-between. Instead of it's not business, but it's not personal, maybe there's a third level for apartments. And so that there is an incentive to build it. And that's where I think if you provide incentives, the marketplace will respond.
So Colin, several weeks ago, we interviewed Lisa Helps, mayoral. Yeah, that's a hard word to say half a dozen times quickly. Mayoral candidates in Victoria. Big part of her campaign is to mobilize the youth vote, to have those folks vote. You've indicated you're a drama teacher at Claremont. You likely understand young people maybe better than a whole lot of us. Although I have 4 children too, but not 4 boys. Hallelujah to you, man. So why don't we switch off now? A natural sort of lead from the workforce housing related issue becomes youthful. Now, why? First of all, they're an emergent leaders. They represent viewpoints also emerging at a federal and provincial level, i.e. environmentalism, etc. This key issue of how do they live here? How do they stay here? How do they work here? Certainly, Lisa, I think, can't speak for her directly, is going to spend time focusing on that group. Do you understand them? What is it that they're asking and looking for? And are there a lot of them in Saanich?
Well, Saanich has over 100,000 people, and if you look at the demographics, about 15,000 are under 30. So you're not dealing with a small amount of people. Now, there are more elderly residents in Saanich, but the question of how do you get the youth people out, I don't think the youth are particularly excited to talk about sidewalks. They're not particularly excited to talk about zoning amendments and building permits. So to me, what you talk about with young people is you talk about a greater vision, because all of these little decisions that are made in Saanich add up to the vision we have. We didn't just decide one day to have a recreation center. There was talk about what do you do with land? Why would we provide it? So when you talk about a vision, that's where you get young people involved. A lot of time is spent on the federal level looking at how disappointed people are with the government and how they feel that they're not listening, or at the provincial level where they feel that their vote doesn't matter. At the local level, what I'm telling students is this is your entry. This is where you get involved, because you can talk to your counselors. Almost all of them have their phone numbers out there that you can call them at home and say, what's going on? So when I talk to young people, and make no doubt about it, I'm talking when I say young people about those who have graduated. I don't want to take advantage of the special role I have with students who are in school still. And I wouldn't want people to think that I'm abusing that relationship, because that's really important to my integrity that people don't think that. And of course, kids in high school, most of them aren't old enough to vote. But the students who have graduated and who have reached out to me, I've told them that if they want to make a change in this world, start on your street. Organize something like a block watch. Join your community association. I've promised to the young people who have offered to volunteer on my campaign that I'll walk with them. I'll go meet the people that they want to have listened to. So the issues that young people want, they want democracy. They're not, like I said earlier, they're not interested in zoning. They're not interested in a sidewalk here and there. But if you say you want to live in a safe community, they get that. You want to have things for youth to do, they get that. So for me, the working with the young people is going to be about identifying needs that they see, but most importantly, finding that by asking them, as opposed to presuming.
I'm going to give you my grandmother's analogy of Greater Victoria, because she's never lived here. When my family moved here, we lived in Sydney. And according to my grandmother, we lived in Victoria. When we moved to Saanich, we lived in Victoria. And when we moved to Brentwood, we lived in Victoria. And when we moved to Langford, we lived in Victoria. I think I've lived in almost every municipality, actually.
Good. So you're a Victoria boy.
When
you've
we lived
lying all these times.
When we lived in Shawnigan Lake, we lived in Shawnigan Lake. But so of course that's an outsider's perspective. A couple of things. First one, pertaining particularly to Saanich, is when I think of Saanich, I think of the great middle for the region. I don't like when you said in your opening statement that you wanted Saanich is the greatest place in Greater Victoria, which is the greatest city in Canada, which is in the greatest country. Is paraphrasing, right? I don't know where Saanich is. Like, what's a Saanich? And I'll qualify that by saying, when I think of Langford, I think of downtown Langford. When I think of Victoria, I think of downtown Victoria. When I think of Souk, I think of Souk. You know what I mean? When I think of Highlands, I'm not sure what I think of. But, but when I think of, and when I think of View Royal, you know, I think of the area by the casino. You know, there's, so where the hell is Saanich? And when you talk about Saanich, aren't you really kind of talking about uptown in one breath? You know, I mean, other areas as well. Like, what is uptown now downtown Saanich? Where's downtown Saanich? So that's my first question. Second question is, and maybe you can sort of lead into this if you want to go down that path, is, are the borders in Greater Victoria written the best way they possibly could be written? Or is there a better way to organize our municipal structure in Greater Victoria?
Jeez.
Well, that was the best way to ask me about amalgamation without saying the A word that I have ever heard. So A plus for language usage there. So going back to where is Saanich, it is a fair question because you're right. Saanich kind of just, it's, everybody loves Saanich. Where is Saanich? Well, it's north of Victoria. It's east of the Highlands. It's, pardon me. Yeah, it is east of the Highlands. It's south of Sydney.
It's the most populous.
It is. It's the eighth largest municipality in BC, over 108,000. So what is unique about Saanich? And it's probably in the same way we'd even say what's unique about Victoria is all these different community nodes. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have 18 community associations within Saanich. Yeah. And I'm sure we could all identify there's even 18 more neighborhoods within Saanich when you say, you could say the ridge at top of Cordova Bay there and places like that. So the fact that there are so many different components is what makes Saanich unique. Mm-hmm. We do have a significant rural area. We go north of, on the Pat Bay Highway, we go north of Saywork. And then it actually juts out to the northwest all the way towards, Durant's Lake. Mm-hmm. And then, and out to Willis Point, which are in, Saanich. So then to the south, there's actually an isthmus of land. There's another language usage one that goes all the way down to the Royal Jubilee. I mean, it's a massive municipality, 40 square miles. So the fact that it is so different is what makes it kind of unique. It has so many different elements. I mean, there is an area in a local area plan called the core, which is your uptown area. Okay. And certainly with the municipal hall being right nearby, that is sort of the core, even though geographically it's in the south. The second question then kind of leaning in towards the borders and amalgamation, which I think is what you were really kind of asking about.
Honestly, not necessarily. Okay. When you look at a topographical map of Greater Victoria and you look at where the borders are, and what you just explained is a municipality that has a lot of really, I guess, competing interests, right? When you look at the rural regions versus the urban and the housing, suburban and university, you know, there's all these sorts of competing regions. And so from a governance point of view for somebody who's running for Saanich Council, there's a lot of things to balance, right?
I don't think it's competing as much as you've just suggested.
Okay. Well, so I guess my point isn't, cause I'm not, the problem with, I've been all over the map on the amalgamation issue. Of course, I'm on the record. 1999, I ran on an amalgamation platform in Victoria. So there's no question where my bias is. However, does that mean that I think Victoria should just be one great big municipality? I've never said that. The question is, what is the most sensible way to organize our borders? And I don't think it's what history has given us by virtue of this pattern that everything's kind of evolved to. I think there's a better way to do it. And so the question that I ask, not just you, but any other council candidates willing to sit at the table with us is, is this the best way to do it, or should we be looking at better ways for regional governance? Is 13 municipalities too many? Maybe 4, maybe 5, maybe, you know, like and of course there's the ballot question that proponents like Susan Jones are putting forward, just asking people that exact question, not saying, do we want to merge every municipality into one big behemoth, but something along the lines of saying, and I don't remember what the exact question is, but it's, you know, should we consider looking at the boundaries of municipalities in Greater Victoria and with an eye to improving them?
Absolutely. It should be on every municipality's ballot this fall. Just a question asking their members. What else can you do that's more democratic than asking your citizens what they want? And so I have a vision that I would like to see 3 municipalities in this region. I think there's a core that you would say most people would identify as Oak Bay, Esquimalt, Victoria, and Saanich, a peninsula, and a west shore. Why I think people are so hesitant to jump into the idea of one municipality, you can look at right now the fiasco that's going on at the CRD.
Yeah.
Because if there was one municipality, you can be rest assured the sewage issue would be done, and it would be in Esquimalt, and the residents of Esquimalt would, for the rest of their lives, hate the rest of Victoria, because mm-hmm. they would feel it was jammed down their throats.
Yeah.
I'm actually not sure where I stand on amalgamation anymore beyond the idea I think three sounds about right. Because when I was 20, I would have said one. We don't need 13. This is ridiculous. This is too much duplication. Studies have come out, though, that the savings aren't huge. It's the ability to get things done that is the advantage. So the idea of being able to contact your counselor, though, I think that's really important. And that's why everybody's like, Highlands, they like, I mean, they're a small municipality, but they know their councillors. They know their mayor. If we had one mayor for the region, and let's say, make a number here, 15 councillors, which probably wouldn't be enough, you wouldn't be able to talk to those people. Right. They would become full-time councillors, and they would have administrative staff that you would be hard-pressed to reach them. What I'm interested in exploring is what the people want. And I know that's what every politician comes in and says. But how else are you going to find out what they want if you don't put it on the ballot? So right. People from amalgamation, yes, I think are very wise to ask them. And they're even asking for non-binding. Mm-hmm. They're not saying you have to do it if it, the thing is yes. It's just to have a question and then to investigate. I'm going to throw a little kind of curveball at you. I'm interested in amalgamation and the idea of what about putting Saanich with the rest of the peninsula? I mean, everybody thinks of Saanich as a core, but the majority of Saanich is physically more like the peninsula. In fact, the majority of our land base in Saanich is on the Saanich Peninsula. Right. So, actually, I may be off by a few percentages there, but a lot of our property in Saanich goes into the Saanich Peninsula. So we've always been pulled down into the core as far as this notion. But I kind of think that the way that the peninsula manages its land with the care for agriculture and careful planning is much more like what Saanich has in mind. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Saanich, if we were to discuss this, not necessarily just lump into the core.
Of course.
So I happen to, I think I mentioned this earlier. I'm actually a Saanich resident and taxpayer and all that kind of stuff. So it's interesting that I would be, have an opportunity to chat directly with Colin. A couple of big issues. So we can't do this without asking you about the sewage piece. Okay. I don't think it'll likely be solved before November. So we're all going to ask everyone, where do you stand? What would you do? And Frank has done some innovative, Frank and Council. I believe have done some innovative independent solutions. Okay. With regard to not necessarily sewage, but the,
biosolids?
Yes. Thank you.
Pardon me. Food
okay.
waste.
Food waste. So certainly I think we need to know your positioning on this sewage issue. And then secondly, and since some of the logistics around really how does a new candidate break into what is traditionally an incumbent-friendly municipal arena in which incumbents almost always have an advantage. So what would make Colin different? Why would you stick out and be able to make a difference?
Well, I'm glad you asked about sewage because I think that is a question that every candidate should be asked. And I don't know necessarily if Saanich had the best representation down at the CRD level without trying to be disrespectful to those people who are serving in public office because I give a tip of the cap to everybody who does. My response to what needs to happen for sewage is the distributed model. Tertiary treatment. The idea of wasting this valuable resource we have in a time when we're seeing around the world the need for water. I mean, not even that far away. Look at California and the droughts they had. And here we are just wasting water. Now, you look at, as I drove in here to Langford and to the beautiful West Shore Chamber of Commerce building that we're in. Nice plug there. I love seeing the signs that are irrigating with non-CRD water. And so they are obviously not using CRD water, but I'm sure that we down in Saanich could find a made in Saanich solution that would allow us to recapture the water. The amount of money that it's going to cost to do a distributed model, I do not agree that it's going to cost more. I think it's the same as buying our first VCR. Remember our first VCR cost $2,500 and now you can get a VCR. I mean, in fact, far. Sorry, I almost swore there. Like,
sorry.
If you can't even find a VCR there nowadays. So the technology, as much as people are saying it's going to be cost prohibitive, I think it's going the other way around. So I support the Sewage Treatment Action Group's plan, which is called the Right Plan for a distributed model, environmentally sensitive, respectful of taxpayers, innovative, and environmentally sensitive. So to me, the idea of a made in Saanich solution is where we need to go. It's not that I think the rest of the CRD is not going to be able to figure it out either, but why would we have one big plant if we can do it in different parts of the region, smaller and less of a blight on the land. Although the plan, to be fair, that they put down from McLaughlin Point looked nice, the residents of Esquimalt don't want it. So for me, in Saanich, I think there's lots of open space. You'd probably look at two different sites that you'd need to deal with, probably something in the western and something in the southeastern. And putting in those two sites in timelines that the provincial government's laid out, I don't think are unreasonable. And I think the idea that we have to go to what the CRD tried to do with one site is just going to result in more frustration. Now, the second question you asked me about, how do I get my name out there? I have a lot of enthusiasm.
Well, differentiate yourself.
Yeah, how do I differentiate myself? Well, I'd like to think that what you're going to see with me is you're going to see a very positive and a lot of enthusiasm. I live my life with the Ralph Waldo Emerson quote, "Nothing great is ever achieved without enthusiasm." And so you're going to see me be very positive. I have a lot of excitement. I love Saanich. I know that sounds like a statement everybody makes, but I really do. And I walk about 60 to 70K a week through Saanich. And I'm not making that up to sound like I'm an amazing person. I walk through Saanich. I see the care that people have for their parks, the love they have for their own properties, and the fact that we live in such a beautiful part of the world. And when you see that, and then you see, well, what would it be like if all of the garbage that was there was gone? What would it be like if all of these electric lights were turned into solar? What if we had bike lanes that were everywhere, not just on major corridors? And not to say that you have to have them on every street, but I mean a lot more. So how am I going to differentiate myself? I'm going to go out and meet the people. This summer, I've committed to meeting at least 5,000 houses. Saanich has 40,000. So if you put that out there, I'm looking at about 50 days of meeting 100 different houses, which is very doable to me. People are going to come out, hopefully meet me. The question I'm going to ask, do you vote? And if they don't vote, I'm going to say, oh, that's too bad. Why not? And what I think they're going to say is I have nothing to vote for. So what I will do is I'll lay out my vision that I have for Saanich, which is to be the greatest place to live. And I'm going to give them a reason to come out on November 15th. How else am I different? I plan to be active on social media all the time. Saanich Council is going to start podcasting or webcasting their council meetings. I'm going to make myself available. Even though you noted, Paul, I have one tweet and three Twitter followers.
Four now, we followed you.
Oh, well, thank you.
I'll be following.
I haven't actually started to build that up. I'm doing a slow rollout of my campaign. I'm going to be extremely active on social media. And the Mayor Nenshi in Calgary is a great model for that, of grassroots from the bottom up. And you want to talk about how we were asking earlier, how do you connect with young people? You go where they are. And they're not at all candidates meetings, unfortunately. They're on social media.
Actually, it's funny you mentioned Nenshi, because a friend of mine, Derek Fildebrandt, with the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, is constantly in the news over Twitter wars that he has with the mayor there. So should see if we can get him on the show. Anyway, there is one last thing, if I may.
Try to usurp you somehow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As fans of theater, what can we do to enhance and raise the profile of community theater in our region and, get people to spend a little bit less on time at sports and other things, and a little bit of that time enjoying some of the amazing talents we have.
Just a little bit more context to that, adding to the question. So,
not to say I don't love sports too.
No, that's okay. So, Langford Council, every 5 years, generally speaking, has asked their residents to rank the issues, rank what they'd like to see their money spent on. 5 years ago, that was clearly and overwhelmingly around recreation facilities. And Stu Young and council delivered. That process happened about 2 months ago again, and the overwhelming desire of Langford / West Shore residents became, let's try to build out our arts and culture facilities and infrastructure. I have to think that that's what's happening right across the region as we become a more mature let's say, more populous area. People are gravitating towards wanting to build out our arts and culture infrastructure. To date, that's almost centralized in Victoria around these theaters. So would love to hear your opinions on that.
Sure. I think the first off, the idea of arts facilities in the CRD is an interesting discussion because everybody thinks of the Royal and the McPherson. But the reality is there are so many more. And I'm really happy to hear what you said about the Langford proposal, because the one thing about Langford is, you know, if they are going to identify a need, say they're going to do it, it'll get done. And you got to tip your cap to that mayor and council in Langford here. So I imagine I'll be talking to you in a couple of years from now in this massive new theater, which is great. So the piece around, Paul, you asked about how do you enhance community theater. I think what you do is you acknowledge that it exists and you go to it. And the challenge is that it actually is very healthy. The arts are very healthy in Victoria.
They are.
Yeah, so this notion that they're not, I think, is probably just because it's not as covered. And I don't want to sound like a media conspiracy, but it's not as appropriate probably to cover a community theater production of Blithe Spirit by Noel Coward in the front pages of the Times Colonist. But if the Harbor Cats lose 7 games in a row, it's probably going to make the front page of the Sports.
Right.
And they are not professional baseball players, those students who are playing. Most of them are students because they play in the college system. Right. So coming back to the arts piece, I think what we have to just do is you need some leadership to acknowledge the role that arts play in a community. They help reflect what's great about our community, and it is at times what people will come to a community for, is if the arts and culture. I mean, look at a community like Fernwood. All of us know is what's going down in Fernwood. It's kind of this quirky place. It's because there's a lot of artists living there who are creative, and the ideas they express, whether or not it's on the street, in their houses, in their gardens, are creative. So I think we just have to have some leadership when it comes to arts to say that we're going to fund it. And yes, there's no endless supply of money, but that the arts are important. And so you'll see me speaking towards having arts funding. And one of the platforms that I'm really interested in is Saanich unveiling a significant piece of public art annually. And I'll be blunt, I really dislike what's in front of the Memorial Arena, so that's not what I'm talking about. But on the other hand, what I do love is the sculpture Roy on the Blenkinsop Bridge. When you take the Lochside Trail, there's that brass statue of Roy. So this inspiration comes from having spent a lot of time in New York as a teacher leading trips. My students are blown away by the amount of public art. Almost every major intersection will have a piece of public art. So I'd like to start a program. I'm not saying Saanich is going to buy these $100,000 brass statues. Not at all. But rather, we work with people in the neighborhoods and with the nonprofit groups and the artists to install it. It's not going to be just paid for by Saanich. That's not what I'm suggesting. But that maybe the chambers get involved, the community associates, and we unveil a piece of art. And yes, it will be sometimes controversial. So to come back to your question, how do we do it? We go out and we support it. And we put our money where our mouth is by funding it when it's appropriate.
Well, that sounds great. And I know, Colin, you and I had a conversation prior regarding the art in front of the Memorial Arena. And the issue there isn't just so much the controversy, because, you know, artists, pure sort of artists would say controversy is part of art. And I get that. The problem is there's such limited funding for public art. We have to, I think, focus our attention on things that are going to be appreciated by certainly the majority. If we had an unlimited budget for public art, absolutely those pieces should be there as well. But in the absence of an unlimited budget, we have to, I think, make some difficult decisions when it comes to public arts funding.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, innovative business models, because clearly that's one of the barriers to developing an arts and culture environment within a municipality, is the fact that that they're hard to fund, that they don't make money.
Yeah.
Therefore, where is the operational consistency? Nonetheless, it's becoming increasingly a priority for the residents of Lower Vancouver Island that we have a robust arts and culture community. Really glad to hear that you're going to support and invest and be innovative around doing that for Saanich. Well done.
That's the word, if I can say. It's an investment, just like education. And it's just like healthcare. It's an investment in people's lives. And so if you apply simply the business model, we would never have art. So you're right. I appreciate that. And it's an investment. I like that terminology.
Well, and the issue I have with the piece in front of Memorial Arena, I know I don't want to harp on it too much, isn't so much the piece in front of the Memorial Arena. It's the impact that had on the minds of the people when it came to public art, on the minds of the voters, because they're all looking at it saying, what a total waste of money. We shouldn't spend money on public art. And so the negative impact that that had, I think was very profound. And we're hopefully just finally getting past that with surveys such as the one that Langford had, where we're identifying arts and culture as being priorities, because I think a beautiful city, you know, or a beautiful region, if you will, needs that. And we've been lacking that. And I think part of the whole reason we've been lacking that is because of these, the impact that pieces like the one in front of, the Memorial Arena, or the Day is for Sleeping, Night is for whatever, Sleepwalking,
piece. Day is for Resting, Night is for Sleeping.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, I'm sure that's a whole separate show, Colin. And for that matter, we didn't even talk about the teacher strike. So we'll have to get Colin back on that one.
Yeah, I hope we do get Colin back, and perhaps closer to September if he desires. Maybe he doesn't want to talk about that. We've covered off sewage. We've covered off workforce housing. We've covered off arts and culture. We've covered off why Colin is different. I think the voters of Saanich will have an opportunity now to really understand where you come from. And I think as a voter in Saanich, you're someone I would want to have as a leader and someone representing my interests, because you're representing what I want. So well done. Thanks for coming on our show.
Yeah, thanks, Colin. And good luck in November, and appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you both for having me. It was real fun. You guys are great interviewers.
Welcome to the inaugural This Week in Business. And we're very excited this week to be sitting down with Dallas Gisselson from the Greater Victoria Development Agency. My good friend, of course, John Jurisic, who is one of the founding fathers of the Greater Victoria Development Agency. John.
Oh, man. Dallas, we're never going to live this founding father thing down. Could you perhaps have said founding young man or founding teenager, but no, he's going to work this hard.
There are many young fathers around there.
That's right. Okay, well, certainly I'm so pleased to be able to involve you in what we think is a topic sorely lacking in our community. That is the good news stories about business, the positive things that happen. So often only the negative stuff is reported. And so we just don't get a sense of what's really percolating out there. So if we have a couple of stories from you per week, and I know that you probably have dozens, I think it's going to be better for our business community as a whole.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm happy to be here. And thanks again for the invitation to come back and talk about what's going on in our local marketplace here. And like you said, yeah, a lot of these success stories are just kind of hidden away, and they're in boardrooms and in offices, and we don't really hear about them and celebrate them, more importantly, right? I mean, we should be celebrating the success of the business community, because this is essential to the sustainability. I mean, we use the word sustainability thinking about the environment, but think about the long-term sustainability of our community. You know, jobs and household incomes are just so essential to that, and that's what really ties in all the other elements. Think if charities and other nonprofits can survive without, a prosperous economy in the region. So, yeah, happy to be here to talk about stories, and I think I have a couple here that we can delve into.
No, that's great. And just to reiterate, we're going to focus on positive. We're going to focus on constructive, and that information just doesn't get out. So you got some stuff for us this morning.
Yeah. Well, I thought, you know, talking about good news, and we do hear so much in the news about Viking Air. Viking Air has been a wonderful success story here for many years. And the most recent story is actually, you know, obviously does involve Viking Air, but it's actually more about kind of the behind the scenes stuff about Viking Air. So, and that announcement was that Viking Air is going to be investing in a flight simulator to locate here in the Greater Victoria region. And when I say Viking Air, it's actually through a, you could call a subsidiary company called Pacific Sky Aviation. Pacific Sky Aviation does all the training for Viking Air aircraft. So a lot of times pilots will come into the community and they'll actually live here for an extended period of time and do their training through Pacific Sky. But having an actual flight simulator, and I think we should be clear on this. This isn't a laptop and a computer game. This is a think about this. So a Viking Air plane is worth about $7 million. That's like the starting price for a Viking Air product, right? 6.95 or something like that. So these are expensive planes. The simulator itself, I think, is about a $20+ million investment.
So John, I just gotta say, I see a future YouTube video in this. We're gonna go to the Flight Simulator Center. And we're going to record you trying to land a plane and probably crashing it. So how does it sound?
I don't think there's an audio program that could record the panic and screaming that you would hear with such a process.
Well, that's cool. That's exciting.
Viking Air is literally one of the world's premier airline manufacturing companies, located here on Vancouver Island. They employ close to 500+ employees. And they are selling airplanes all around the world. And you're right. One of the benefits to working with Viking Air is that they also have this training component. So they'll train you. I believe they did that with Vietnam. They train their pilots as well as selling them their planes. The whole notion, and I'd like to explore this further in other episodes, Dallas, is really here we have this global leader. Who do they actually deal with? Who are they? Where is their supply chain? Is it local? What is the size of the aviation industry? Anyway, that's for another day. Mm-hmm. So I'll let you get back to this neat endeavor.
Yeah, I just wanted to say really two things about this. I mean, because the obvious assumption that we'd make is okay, so Viking Air invests in a program that can help them sell more planes, right? So that's good. Whatever helps Viking Air achieve. And, there's already a 2+ year backlog to buy an airplane. So, these airplanes are a big deal. They're a big deal. Wow. Yeah. But the exciting thing for me is I think about exactly what you said, John, and that's the supply chain. So the more critical mass we can get around those local suppliers to Viking Air in this region, the better kind of long-term kind of residual effect that becomes self-perpetuating is going to happen. And if you look at a community like Wichita, Kansas, Wichita is one of the most advanced aviation clusters in the world. So you have Airbus there, you have Cessna there, you have deep supply chain throughout the Wichita area. That's the type of success that we would look to replicate. And this sort of investment that Pacific Sky Aviation and Viking are making is the kind of the starting block to take that aviation industry locally to the next level.
I'm curious, Dallas, do you know at the moment where people train to fly a Viking aircraft?
Well, there's flight schools all over the world. So there, you can learn to fly, anywhere really.
Oh, okay.
But this is a specific, program that's geared at Viking Air specific product, which are out of production de Havillands, right? So de Havilland, as we know, is
right.
Many, many decade history, and it's a UK company originally.
Yeah.
The rights that Viking Air bought they actually bought from, Bombardier.
Right.
Which they originally bought the rights from de Havilland Canada. So this is going back decades, right? Mm-hmm. And then in 2005, 2006, Viking Air acquired those out of production design rights for the de Havilland. So you can train anywhere, but this is an example of bringing that home and giving them a full kind of fuller spectrum that supports the product.
Oh, well, this is exciting.
Yeah, and can't wait to talk and examine, research further supply chain companies that are helping make Viking in this region a global leader in airplane manufacturing.
Absolutely, yeah. And the other thing that's very timely for us is we're actually awarding a contract next week to initiate about a 2-3 month research program, which is going to look at export development and international products of the companies that are exporting in the Victoria region, as well as looking at their supply chains and where their key supply chains are located. And really kind of tying that together. So if we have a supplier in Calgary that's feeding a business that's here, but they're exporting a product to China, tying that all together in a way that we can, one, help them expand into further international markets, but two, look at what suppliers we can hopefully in the medium or long term locate here on the island.
That's great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What else have you got for us today?
We read occasionally, and this has happened, there's some big projects that have happened in the area of local tech companies being acquired by international firms. And the most notable, of course, is Abe Books, right? Abe Books got bought by Amazon. And you know, thank our lucky stars that Abe Books, Amazon saw that as a strategic investment. Abe Books is still here. They're still hiring. You see job ads all the time for Abe Books. So it's a great story, right? But there's always that risk where you have a foreign company coming into a market and making an investment and then leaving, right? And we saw that with Microsoft, right? Microsoft came in. It was a big news. We talked about it a lot as a community. And then all of a sudden, one day you wake up and they're gone, right? So that's always a risk. So last week, we all saw in the media that a local company called Helm, which is a shipping logistics software company, in the marine business, Helm Software, formerly known as EDOC Group. So that's maybe what more people would know that company as. They were acquired by an international company based out of Tokyo called Class NK.
I saw that in the newspaper.
Yeah.
And I go, what? Like who knew?
Yeah.
That this amazingly successful company is here.
Yeah, so they are one of the, I mean, they're employer of the year through Viatech, right, EDOC. Their CEO, Rhonda Brune, is just a real class act individual. He runs a real systematic enterprise. When I first met Ron about 5 years ago, I think they had, 15, 16 employees at the time. And this acquisition last week, they had 55 employees. So that's going to tell you about the type of leadership that's around that table at Helm, formerly known as EDOC. But anyway, so Helm was acquired by a Tokyo-based company, and we would worry as a community, okay, so is this Tokyo company going to buy them up and just move them to Tokyo? And the answer is no. The answer is that they're going to stay here and they're going to grow here, and Ron is going to stay on as CEO for a 5-year period.
Oh, wow.
They're set to take advantage of some global opportunities now.
Paul, we have to come up with some kind of celebratory congratulatory music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you get us for that? Some kind of, balloons popping or something like that?
Or just the applause. Yay!
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Wouldn't that be cool? Because this is like outstanding.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
I thought it would be a fun game. So speaking of Helm Software, I thought it would be fun to look at a couple of other local companies and say, what do these three companies have in common? And so I picked a company called Prealogic, which has been around quite a while, 15 years or so, founded by Doug Pelton.
Yeah.
And another company that's been around for 30 years called Quester Tangent. So here's the question. What do Prealogic, Quester Tangent, and Helm Software have in common? Besides being located here in the best city in Canada.
So are you putting us on the spot?
Or I'm putting our audience listeners on the spot.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the listeners. So you want us to answer, or should we post that and see, and we can answer it maybe next week or so? Because I don't know the answer.
So I don't know. Is it some of the same founders?
No, it's actually, you'd never guess it. So it's kind of, it's a trick question, but I set it up this way because it's something to talk about, but. Anyway, so here's the fun thing. So if you tour Quester Tangent's location out in Keating Crossroad, one thing you would notice there is that you could pretty much eat off the floor. It's so clean and tight. And this is a manufacturing business, world-class train logistic. So that's one thing that's, I guess, common.
And for the record, people don't actually eat off the floor.
No, they don't. You could. No. Okay. You could if you choose.
Yeah. Although they might frown upon it.
So one thing you'd notice is you'd go through this, you'd go on this tour and you'd end up in their lunchroom and you'd see this bulletin board in the lunchroom. And on the bulletin board in the lunchroom is what they call the one-page strategic plan. So it's sitting up on the wall. And the leadership will tell you that any employee at Quester Tangent can walk up to that and you can see what the goals are for any given quarter over the next period of time, right?
Oh, wow.
So everything is clear and transparent and everything is in line to the corporate goal for Quester Tangent. And they are a remarkable success story here in the region, of course.
Yeah.
So here's the answer. The common thing among Prealogic, Quester Tangent, and Helm Software is they all three of those companies use the one-page strategic plan approach.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So one, there was an interview in Business in Vancouver magazine with Doug Pelton, the founder of Prealogic, who, by the way, last month received a Pioneer Award at the WebRTC Conference and Expo in Atlanta, Georgia. So this guy's a pioneer in his field. Yeah. And WebRTC. WebRTC stands for Web Real-Time Communication. So this is the technology that enables like face-to-face, like Skype and things like that. So Doug Pelton is a pioneer in this field, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the Business in Vancouver magazine, they asked him, they're like, what's the most strategic advice or material that you've ever been given. And he said, well, the one-page strategic plan. And he referenced, and there's a book, and I actually have it in front of me right now. It's called Mastering the Rockefeller Habits by Vern Harnish. And Rockefeller, you know, the Rockefeller, the tyke oil and industrialist tycoon.
The first one.
He was the first one. He was the guy that created this one-page plan because he had all these companies and all these interests that he wanted to, at any given time, wanted to pull this thing out and know everything about his company in terms of the goals, the metrics, and all this sort of performance around this. And so he created this thing. And then this author, Vern Harnish, wrote this book that kind of articulated this one-page strategic plan and enables other CEOs to use it. And I thought that's really interesting that these three companies that are all three of them are remarkable success stories in the region, and they are all using this. So I thought that was really interesting.
Well, and I think one of the things that plan does is it really galvanizes everybody in the organization, right? Because, you know, if you're a pretty big company, and some of these companies are big and getting bigger, and you're just, you know, low man on the totem pole, and you're punching widgets, you don't necessarily see the big picture. But if you're able to, you know, very easily and very simply quantify what the big picture is, I think that makes a lot of sense for an organization. So, brilliant.
Yeah.
I love
it. These are such cool stories and, frankly, tons of material for other This Weeks in Business.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, Dallas, Greater Victoria Development Agency, we can't thank you enough for bringing these stories to the public and our community.
Yeah, my pleasure. I look forward to sharing many more.
Awesome.
Opening this up to everyone.
Cool.